I'm Russell Howard. Welcome to Wonderbox. Now we've got one of Britain's most exciting live stand-up comedians. He's the first British Asian comic to sell out Wembley Arena. It's, of course, Paul Chowdhury. And this is his Wonderbox. So here we are with the fantastic Paul Chowdhury. Paul, lovely to meet you.
Well, nice to see you. I've heard a lot about you over the years.
It's nice to see you. It's kind of, I feel a bit shitty because we normally, you, me and Greg do a meal every so often. Well, I haven't seen you for ages.
I think the last time I discussed that was on the Off Menu podcast.
What were you saying? Were you saying about our meals?
I just talked about, how we went out for dinner together, me, Greg and Russell.
Yeah, and it's always a bit of a battle because Greg's a big lad. Hmm. So it's a bit like when there's sort of like a big puppy in the pack. That, I don't know if you feel this, but as the smaller dogs, you've kind of got to get your hands in there before he eats his fill.
Yeah, but you guys drink and I don't drink, and then we go three ways, and then I'm paying for the drink.
Okay, well, that's the first time you brought that up.
I've many meetings to discuss that with them.
Okay. Well, we've had a few meals, but you're right.
I'm down.
Oh, you're way down.
I'm way down on
the deal. Yeah, because me and Greg have a drink. So presumably, well, that explains why you get angry as the evening progresses.
It explains why I get angry when the bill turns up.
Yeah.
I might start. You've actually, guys, made me start drinking.
Well, exactly. If you want to turn a profit.
But for me to break even now, I'd have to become an alcoholic.
Fucking right. Yeah, it's the only way. Because we've really put it away. Well, how about the next meal? Me and Greg will pay for it.
Oh, thanks, man.
And that'll probably get you up.
It will be.
Ish.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think you're still way down, man.
Seeing as I'm way down, like, metaphorically, well, career-wise, compared to these guys.
Mate, come on now. You've done Wembley Arena.
Once.
Yeah, but you've still done it.
And that was when I was taking Mariah Carey's bags to her car.
Behave yourself. Listen, you can be self-deprecating all you like.
That's a true story, actually.
What, you took Mariah Carey's bags?
When I was at uni, I de-rigged the stage Mariah Carey show, and then I ended up taking her bags to the car. And I thought, one day I'm going to sell this place out. And then I sold out the venue.
So all she wanted for Christmas was you?
It was me taking her bags to the car.
Well, that'd be a great video, wouldn't it? Were you excited? Did you ever look what was in her bag?
I just looked at it and it was like dildos and shit.
Okay. That's on her rider. Do you know, the saddest rider I ever saw was, did you ever do that gig in Bournemouth? It was like a strip club that Jeff Whiting was booking for a while. Did you ever do that, Dan?
Yeah, but not as a comedian.
I think I saw you there.
I remember going there and opening the fridge in the green room, and there were three dildos in the fridge. And it was so heartbreaking because you're like, it's the idea that somebody's gone, hey, my dildos better not be room temperature because I'm a professional. It was so sad. Do you know what I mean? Like the dildos were kind of, there were Dairy Lee slices and dildos. They don't belong together.
I had my dildos at room temperature.
Yeah, man.
It's like having a glass of water. It's better for your system if you drink water at room temperature because it's not a shock to your system.
But it doesn't burn as many calories. Cold water burns calories.
But also it shocks your system, so you end up just, your body just pisses it out again.
No.
Yeah.
No. What are you talking about? So if you have cold, so you're telling me as soon as an Eskimo has water in their kind of icy climate, they're pissing instantly?
Yeah. It's just like icicles coming out the dick.
No.
Yeah, it's true.
It's not true. You can look as handsome as you like and you can stare deeply at me, but that's bullshit. Like, when we can't say Eskimos, is it Inuits?
Inuits is better.
When an Inuit has a piss, it doesn't become like a sword.
Yeah.
No, that's not saying it doesn't. Yeah. I would have seen that. Edinburgh would have told me.
See, this is room temperature that your lovely production crew.
Okay, well, let's get some ice and see what happens to your dick, shall we?
Well, we don't have that, because if we did that on the podcast, would have to keep on breaking for me to piss.
I've been in an ice bath with you.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if we should be speaking about this.
Yeah, but you didn't piss ice.
No, but we didn't drink it at the time. We just had a competition.
So you're telling me that if you drank icy water, you would instantly piss?
Yeah.
I mean, there's got to be a way of challenging this.
Because your body it goes into shock.
This feels like it should be a section on The One Show. Do you know what I mean?
Have you done the? You've done the One Show quite a few times.
Of course, I've done the One Show.
I'm not allowed on the One Show.
Why is that?
Don't know.
As far as dreams go, do you know what I mean? I think selling out Wembley Arena is better than doing the One Show.
Well, that was 2017.
Mm. So. But you're only 62 then.
7 years ago.
Yeah. Was that when it was?
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to have you on this because the whole point of it is you talk about things you love. And I'm really excited to know what are the things that Paul Chowdhury loves.
Well,
aside from trivia about icy piss.
Well, I'm a stand-up comedian. I don't know if you've
heard
about that. I do stand-up.
Yeah.
That's really where how I pay the bills is I don't do anything else apart from stand-up.
Yeah. I mean, you got a podcast, but let's not.
I got a podcast about, and you've done episode one of that one. We're about 60 episodes in.
You were briefly a PA for Mariah Carey, but apart from that, you're a stand-up.
Yeah, you were brilliant on the first podcast.
Yeah. Oh, you should listen to that, by the way. Paul Chowdhury's podcast. It's really good. So you're a stand-up.
I'm a stand-up.
Yeah.
But what I do as a career choice is not really considered an art form.
Right.
So what I want to discuss with you is stand-up comedy as an art form.
So what you want to put into... The first thing into Wonderbox is stand-up comedy.
Box, yeah.
As
an art form. Because stand-up comedy is obviously stand-up comedy, but as an art... It's not really... It's the least respected of entertainment art forms. We are the jesters
castles. I think jugglers are beneath us. Jugglers and magicians.
Ventriloquists.
Yeah. But like
ventriloquists, I think are higher than us.
No, no. I can't stand behind that.
Well, you couldn't. You'd be putting the hand in the.
I mean, you and me doing a ventriloquist double act with your hand up my ass—that's a winner, isn't it?
I'd probably
use... me saying cheeky things and you getting angry with me. That'd get you on the one show. Just imagine that.
Maybe so I can get you.
What have you been up to, Paul? It's just me squelching.
Or just making you speak in an Indian accent or something.
Don't do that. Then we've like this is our big break, and then you get me cancelled. We can't like just have me talking in my normal. I'll be talking. I'll do.
You still do the West Country accent, don't you?
Yeah. So I'm from the West Country. I'm not Indian. But yeah, it's just I got asked.
But is that the only accent you do? I've seen you do lots of other accents.
I could. Well, what are my safe ones? I can do Russian, no problems.
A bit offensive.
Nah, it's fine, innit?
So if you're the same colour as the race, it's acceptable.
South Africa, fine. Germans, easy. I can't do French. That's the one accent I struggle with.
But they're all white people you're doing.
Sure, yeah.
Why wouldn't you go... Why aren't you as diverse with your accents?
Well, that's an interesting way of looking at it. I guess fear.
They're not going to do anything to you. They shouldn't be scared
they,
of
them. Who's that?
Whoever you're...
No, but I think... I think I feel like it wouldn't aid the joke.
You're a very effective stand-up now. I've been watching you for over the years.
Very kind. It's a lovely quote. It's like Malcolm Hay, effective. Do you remember that? There used to be a Time Out reviewer called Malcolm Hay, and it was always like experienced. Yeah, he's no longer with us. But the comics were always described as experienced, skillful, multifaceted.
Enigmatic,
yeah. So let's talk about stand-up as an art form. Obviously, I agree with you. I love it. But what do you love about stand-up?
Well,
why is it the first thing in your box? Why is it the thing you adore?
Oh, well, stand-up is where we're free. I'm free anyway.
Okay.
I can really be my true self.
That's interesting. So you feel it's... So you feel... What is it you feel when you're on stage then? That you don't... That gives you that kind of freedom?
It's the only place you can kind of... When a gig's going well... sometimes it goes well. You kind of feel like you're flying. You're kind of surfing the crowd, and it's the only place you can have an instant connection with a room full of people that we don't know, we've never met before, but you feel at one, and then you go home. It's a very unusual thing to do, isn't it? As Jerry Seinfeld said, we're the only person staring or facing the wrong way in a room, because everyone's facing forward and we're looking at that audience to see, oh, actually, you know, what I'm about to say and these thoughts that have come to my head are what are going to make you guys laugh for 2 hours.
Yeah. So what made you want to do it in the first place?
I grew up to stand up and I just found it a fascinating art form to, and there was something in it where I said something in front of a class as a child and they would just erupt into laughter when I wasn't trying to be funny. People said I have this funny way of delivering things, which I don't really agree with, but I thought if it works, why not try it? And then I'd get kicked out of the classroom for saying something funny. The teacher would think I'm trying to be funny, but I wasn't trying to be funny, I was just saying something.
Yeah. What was the thing you would say that would get you thrown out of class?
I'd just say something, and the teacher would ask a question, and I'd respond to what the question was, and the whole class would erupt into laughter, and I was like, why are they laughing? And then
"Get out of the classroom, Mr. Chowdhury, and stand in the corridor."
That was the teacher, not the children.
Yeah.
And then I'd have to just stand in the corridor for the rest of the lesson.
Yeah.
Which was quite humiliating.
But was it humiliating, or did you feel like, because I remember that feeling when you're at school and you make everyone laugh, and it feeling so exciting. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, when you, that like, buzz.
But I also remember explaining to a teacher, my German teacher, Frau Ford, and she was sort of saying, you're pretty intelligent. Why do you keep talking in class? And I was like honest with her, and I said, I just can't help it. Like, you leave these gaps that are perfect for me to say something.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be a dick, but you've got to speak quicker or I'm going to come in and hit you. But she actually respected the honesty. I was at 15. I can't help it. I remember saying to her, it's an illness that if there's a gap and there's a moment, I value their laughter over my GCSE German. And, you know, and we got on great. So she'd say, Russell, wo wohnst du? And I say, ich wohne in Ropley. Mein Name ist Russell Howard. Ich bin ein Einzelkind. And she would say, nein. I said, ja. She said, nein, du bist not ein Einzelkind. I said, and I would, because I didn't really know German, I would go, why'd you say this to me? And then everyone would laugh. And she's like, Russell, I've just taught your brother and sister. You're not an only child. And then I would say, why are you bring this up in front of everybody? And then, you know, everyone's laughing when I'm clearly broken because both my brother and sister died. And then I'm out. But the
I didn't know you speak French.
Yeah, a bit. But the excitement that I felt, I think, I wonder if that's the beginnings of I don't know. It's such a funny thing. And it's so scary to do stand-up the first time you do it. But I know what you mean about that, the sort of sense of becoming yourself. And I don't know, I presume everyone does it. When the first time you do stand-up comedy, you it's that feeling where you go, it's like sitting in a comfy chair.
But what you're describing and what we're discussing now of our childhood traumas.
It's not a trauma. It's a trauma for Frau Ford. I was having a belter of her.
Or experiences. It's like the guy at the office, yeah, Dave's funny, mate. He should be a comedian.
Yeah.
Like, it's that, all right, he's getting a laugh in front of his mates and his classmates or his work colleagues. But standing in front of a room full of strangers is where things change. That's when you're like, yeah, I'm really Billy Big Bollocks now.
What?
You know, when you're standing in front of a room, you're not in class.
Yeah.
That's kind of a safe space for us.
But I don't think my bollocks expand. I think it'd be interesting to know what happens to our genitals when we're
on stage.
I remember
seeing you.
Oh, yeah.
At the King's Head.
Well, my nuts went in like a kangaroo.
Yeah, they inverted.
Yeah, but I was, I don't know.
How many gigs were you in then?
First time we saw each other, probably 10, 20.
You were about 10. Yeah, you were very new. I was at the back of the room, I think, you know, it was the Thursday night when there was like 20 comedians on.
Yeah.
And you were on towards the end.
But that's what it's going to be, isn't it? It's sort of that.
But you did well.
So who are you? Who are your, when you talk about stand-up as an art form, who are your artists that you've admired? Who do you sort of look up to?
When I was growing up or?
Yeah. Growing up and now.
I mean, growing up, it was like, you know, the George Carlins, the Sam Kinisons, of the Americans.
What, when you were, when we were like 15?
Yeah, when I was watching and all getting tapes, the early Pryor stuff and the two Eddie Murphy concerts, Raw Delirious, you know, the Kinisons. In England, we weren't really, alternative stand-up was an 80s thing.
Yeah.
In the 80s, alternative stand-up in America was, you know, Red Fox, and people who weren't white comics were becoming stadium comics, like doing Saturday Night Live and stuff, but we didn't really have that thing until...
I remember seeing Bring the Pain, the Chris Rock HBO special. I was 16 years old and I just remember watching that with my dad and just howling. Did you watch comedy with your dad?
Yeah, my dad was into Morecambe and, like, we obviously like TV Morecambe was, like some others do have them back in those days, and that was the kind of comedy that you see on British mainstream TV, Morecambe and Wise. But Benny Hill, I wasn't a big fan of Benny Hill. That wasn't something you could watch in front of your family.
Right.
It was quite misogynistic, in fact, if you look at it now.
Yeah.
But even then, I kind of was uncomfortable.
Wow. That's pretty fascinating, isn't
Benny,
it?
Benny Hill, yeah. Remember when he was on his deathbed, Benny Hill, Michael Jackson came to visit him in hospital.
That's right, because he was obsessed with Benny Hill, wasn't he?
Benny Hill was huge in America.
Michael Jackson obsessed with Benny Hill, yeah. There's a photo of the two of them at Epstein's Island.
Is there?
No.
No, but Michael is on the list.
Yeah.
He's on the Epstein list. Yeah, Benny Hill's not on the Epstein list.
No. What? Okay, and now who are your sort of stand-up favourites?
And then, you know, coming through stand-up for as long as I've been doing it, I've kind of worked with everyone.
Yeah.
So it's interesting seeing, you know, where Mickey and McIntyre and Lee Evans, who doesn't do it anymore, Patrice O'Neill, who I worked with, and the Black Circuit.
So did you work on the Black Circuit in America?
I did gigs, yeah, LA and New York.
What's that like?
It was great. You know, doing LA was different. I did a show called Chocolate Sundays.
Right.
Martin Lawrence, I did the Comedy Store, and the open spots they put on at the beginning, so everyone's coming to their seats, and Martin Lawrence was taking a seat while I'm doing like my first, the 10 minutes at the top.
But how does a, like you said, the Black Circuit differ from kind of, you know, the Comedy Store?
What, the main gigs?
I'm intrigued.
Back in the early 2000s, when I was like, there wasn't opportunities for people of diverse backgrounds to get me. Like, when I came through, like, late 98, 99, 2000s, I was doing as well as these guys, like, the other acts on the bill, but you weren't being considered for TV work or because they didn't think you... And agents wouldn't even touch us.
Right.
There wasn't really an Asian circuit as such.
Right.
I sold out the Apollo before doing Live at the Apollo.
Yeah.
And, you know, the things like that. And then they thought, oh, there's actually an audience for...
Yeah.
But the mindset has changed in these 25-odd years.
Yeah, yeah. And did you prefer one or the other?
I remember just doing any gig I could get at the time, and being a person, a British, a Londoner with ethnic roots from India, and being able to perform on all circuits and adapt my material and talk about my experience with certain cultures, which on the mainstream circuit would have been considered offensive at the time. Probably more so now, like you're talking about differences, and like I grew up to Jackie Mason as well.
Yeah.
Talked about Jews and Gentiles and compared and contrasted the cultures. And you do that in the Black Circuit. They couldn't believe what they were seeing. This Indian guy who knows about Black culture as well. And then I go and perform at some Hindu as the jongleurs the next day.
Yeah.
And then have a set that works for that crowd. So you had to adapt, but certain comics couldn't do those crossover gigs.
Yeah.
Because they had that one act.
Yeah.
So it was almost like being British and Indian. You know, you go home and you go to family events and they're all very Indian, and you go to hang out with you and Greg, and I'm very English.
And did you, because you did gigs in, where did you perform recently? It wasn't Dubai.
I did Saudi Arabia last month.
So talking about, like, you know, I mean, you're the Jordan Henderson of stand-up.
Yeah.
What was that like?
That was good. I was the first British act to do a solo show out there.
Yeah.
You know, they've got Inglesias went out there, Fluffy, Kevin Hart went out there. I think he got fined because they breached some of the terms in what you can say. You know, there's restrictions.
What were the restrictions?
No discussions about sex, innuendo, you know, like that kind of material, religion, their royal family. Basically, not being offensive.
Right. So how was that for you?
Well, I did my show as I normally do it, but the halal version.
Right. Because I was in Dubai and I had a big list of things you weren't allowed to say.
Dubai's a little bit more freer, you know?
Yeah, well, this is it. And they were like kind of... But I found it just like a normal...
Yeah.
It felt like a corporate, is the truth. It just felt like kind of everyone was there and you're all sort of... It wasn't so bad. What do you think you'd be doing if you didn't have stand-up in your life?
What would I be doing?
Yeah.
Well, I used to work for Dixon's. I used to be a security guard. I used to be an extra. I used to be a drug dealer.
Were you?
No, that was...
I was going
to
say.
I just added that bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Just wanted to, because the rest of them sounded so boring. I thought I'd add something into it. But, you know, I had a very working class background, you know. You know, it was tough in college and stuff like that. I got kidnapped one time.
Okay.
Been kidnapped.
What happened there?
Been kidnapped bad attempts on my life.
You can't just, let's do one thing at a time.
I've woken up, you know, thinking, oh, I'm alive. Yeah. But, you know, this kind of, this is the...
Who kidnapped you?
Just three guys.
What?
Three guys kidnapped me.
When you were how old?
I was about 17, 18.
And why?
Oh, it was...
Mistaken identity, stag do gone wrong, or...?
Well, there was three guys at this college. I was one guy at this college.
Yeah.
And he basically had this car and said, oh, do you want to drive it? But it was a stitch-up. So I sat in the car, moved the gear stick, and the gear stick came off in my hand. Like, the gear stick was like, and he goes, you've broken my car. You owe me a new gear stick. So it was a stitch-up.
Right.
So he said, yeah, I've got a new car. It was a bit soul banger, but when you're like... in your late teens, you're like, oh, it's a car, I'm sitting in a car, I can drive it. So he goes, yeah, you owe me. You're gonna have to pay me for this gear stick.
Right.
So it just come off my hand. It was, well, then he made a call. And two other guys turn up in another car. And they say, you've got to pay for this gear stick. So now three against one. And I said, well, I can't afford to pay for this gear. You're going to have to pay us £300. They're probably going to split it, £100. And that's a lot of money. Back in those days,
yeah,
you know, and this other, firstly, you know, there's two guys which, you know, I probably couldn't have taken all three of these guys on. So, so the other two guys said, "You're gonna have to fight this guy," and he was much, but he was about, you know, 6 foot, and I was much smaller than him, and he goes, "Well, if I'm gonna have to fight, I'm gonna have," and pulls a screwdriver out. So he goes, "I'm gonna fight you, but I'm gonna have to use the screwdriver."
And you're like, you could use that as a gear stick.
Yeah, you could use that. Well, it was a smaller screwdriver, but yeah, the gear stick was...
Yeah.
So I'm holding this gear stick, thinking I'm going to have to fight this guy, but I'm thinking, well, if I... And he goes, they said, we don't really like this guy, but if you want to fight him, this is your way out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, right, if I manage to beat this guy up with a gear stick,
yeah,
and he's got a screwdriver and stabs me in the face with a screwdriver, which you probably would have stabbed me in the neck,
let's,
or something.
Let's move away. What's the next thing you want to put in your Wonder Box?
Love.
Love, okay. So you like, right?
I think love is quite an interesting thing, isn't it?
Yeah. What, are you in love?
No.
Have you been in love?
I love you. I love you as a friend.
Yeah. What's the three? What are the three stages of love? It comes from the Greek, isn't it? It's eros and the other two. It's really interesting where you have that kind of platonic love.
That was one of my kidnapping stories.
Oh, Jesus Christ. What are the three stages of love?
So eros is like, oh yeah.
Yep.
Philos is like, you're my mate. And agape is loving the big man upstairs.
No, it's love for all, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fondness for humanity. But Dan's right, it's sort of broadly speaking, there's three types of love, which are and we and everyone.
Yeah.
So, you know, presumably you could have all of those experiences if you went to a gangbang full of pleasant folk.
Because
you'd full of nice Christians.
Yeah, exactly. You'd have a lovely moment, one person. Hey, I'm not gonna... And then you're like, Terry, how you doing? Yeah. And then you go, this is a great bash. What a buffet.
Yeah.
What is the specifics of love then that you kind of...
Well, it's just interesting, isn't it? Because...
Do you like being in love?
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't been in love for like maybe 50, 60 years now. It's been a long time.
But you clearly had a love for...
It's like... Your family, your phone.
Who do you... Have you ever been in love with, like, a partner?
Yeah, but then when it ends, you're like, was this actually love or a situation of convenience?
Tell me someone you've been in love with and how that made you feel. Because I'm intrigued.
Well, like...
I think you loved... I know you loved your dad. I know you loved your mum. And I know that you were desperately close to them.
Yes, unconditional love.
Yeah, but this is is there anyone else?
I don't know if you have unconditional love with anyone outside of your family, do you, or your parents?
That's a really good point. And it's
unconditional love.
Yeah.
Like if you now committed a crime, your missus would have to would really consider whether she'd tell the police or not. But would your mum tell anyone?
No.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I tell you what, like, when you talk about unconditional love, it's also love is a really, it's a burden to carry sometimes.
Yeah.
Because my dog, Archie.
Yeah.
So we had, Archie got put down.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
And that was so sad.
When was this?
It was in November. It was gut-wrenching, but it is that thing where you go, it's the that feeling of what it must be like to lose a child. Like, I've only lost a dog, and that felt like my world had collapsed.
Well, as the Queen says, isn't it? It's the price of love.
The Queen said that? The
Queen said that's the price of love, is that grief that you experienced.
Uh-huh.
But is it worth it?
Well, this is the... But it's do the pros outweigh the cons?
Mm.
Does the heartache... Because, you know, like, let's say you've been with a girl, you've split up, that breaks your heart, but you've had all those moments leading up to that, and hopefully those moments outweigh the sadness. What's the next thing on your list?
Well, I think this kind of added to the first topic, which is... The next one was multiculturalism.
Okay.
We were discussing that.
Some bigots here, Childress, right? What do you love about multiculturalism?
Well, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for multiculturalism. So obviously I've embraced it, and hopefully I've contributed something to society.
Yeah.
Even though I'm born in London and British, but when I get hate, it's like, if you don't like it, might want you go back to it. Like, well,
do you get a lot of hate?
Oh yeah, I've had all kinds. You know, over the 25 years.
Yeah.
Of comedy, approximately. There's been a lot of hate.
And when you say you get like hate,
generally it's online.
And but what is that like? Is that, you know, is that difficult?
No, you just get used to it, you know. But it's when you get death threats is when it goes a bit too far, and then the police have to get involved.
And is that out of? Do you feel that's kind of? Because of material that you've said?
Well, you just don't know what it's for.
Right.
You know, it's just people, you just don't know who they are, what they're going through.
Yeah.
And whether they're just doing it for attention, generally they are.
And does that make you then go, I should pull back?
Well, you know, comedy online is like busking now.
Mm.
It's like standing at King's Cross Station and singing, and people walk past. But rarely do people stop in front of the bus, go, "Hey, you shit, Mike, wanker, stop singing." Whereas in the internet, you put a video out and people, "Well, this is shit."
Mm-hmm.
Well, scroll, carry on scrolling.
Yeah.
There's other things. But we're putting it out there to people who potentially aren't going to be into our stuff. And that's inevitable.
But it's like, obviously we're coming to this from the point of being a stand-up comedian. But I often think that about kids these days, that children can put out videos that represent themselves, and people can comment on the art of a child and tell that child whether it's good or bad. And that is a huge thing. Imagine that. Imagine being, you know, 14 and putting a photo of you that you think's cool or you think's funny or whatever. You instantly know how many people think it's cool and what everyone thinks of it.
Yeah.
It's just like that is a freaky thing. I think I'd have really struggled being a teenager today. I think it's a fucking hard job, man.
Well,
because you've got to become a person and you've got to raise a brand to survive.
When we got pictures taken at school, the photographer took them and then you'd have to wait a month for your parents to pay for that picture to take it.
Yeah, and it was a reminder of like just like... acne, not brushing your teeth, and then you hope for the best the following year.
Imagine posting that picture back then.
Fuck yeah. It was exactly. Well, there's photos of me that I've put on the TV show when I was 12 and 14. They're like memes that aren't even connected to me. Like there's one that says, "Hey ladies, dinner ladies," like that. And it's like, I didn't write that joke. It's all right, and it fits. It fits the face, but it is that. It's a good example of like, There's countless videos of like, you've seen that ginger kid who's just dancing, quite a big lad from America. He's everywhere now, and he's celebrating. It's kind of cool, but also he has become a thing. It's fucking scary.
Yeah,
man.
People become memes.
Yeah,
there were no such thing as memes when we were growing up.
No. What's next on the list?
Well, I think we've kind of covered this as well. Offence.
Okay.
Well, offensive comedy we've just discussed. Obviously, we're going back to what is offence? Because...
Something that keeps out neighbours?
what is offence, Mike?
Yeah.
Now, offence in comedy is, you know, people saying being destroyed by destroyed by a fence.
But that's what I mean, as what I was saying earlier, that you can say whatever you want,
yeah,
but you have to live with the consequences of what you say. And maybe it's not the worst thing to have to really think about what you want to say. The snag with that is very often when you're performing stand-up, you write on stage.
Yeah.
And the first time, second time, third time, fourth time you say it, it might not be finished.
Yeah, it takes ages.
And that, I think that's a tricky area where somebody goes, you said this, and you go, yeah, because I was figuring it out. Mm. And I think it's, but unfortunately, it that is a byproduct of it. And particularly if you're going to juggle hot potatoes, you have to know what it means to people. And it's sort of, I always think that phrase of, does it pass the red face test? Can you say that joke in front of the people you're joking about?
Exactly.
Without getting a red face. If you can, you're fine.
I had this example doing Jonglers back in the day, and a comic came backstage and he goes, oh, I can't do my disabled joke tonight. I said, why not? So there's a disabled person in the front row. I said, well, then it's offensive.
Yeah.
Then it's offensive to that group of people if you can't do it in front of that group of people, or a black person.
And furthermore, you know that.
Yeah. And he knows that.
Yeah. And if you don't take that to heart, then you're a fucking coward.
Yeah. I've been offended watching comedy. It was weird being a comic, because I think you should be able to say anything. But then I saw a comic do a routine the other day about like choking women during sex and stuff. And I'd literally just watched the Andrew Tate thing the night before, and it was about that subject, which is actually quite a dangerous, we're talking to a young crowd and you're endorsing this type of behavior.
Yeah.
At what point do some of those young men in the audience think, oh, this is actually, oh, we're laughing about this, this is acceptable to, and it's obviously not, the joke's not clear enough unless you're really tackling an issue. When you're taking heavy subjects, I think it's got to be very clear what your point is.
Yeah.
And when the thing's not worked out properly, the routine's not worked out, you haven't got a point to when you're saying, oh, I enjoy choke sex. It's like, well, this is, you could cause an issue here.
Yeah. He definitely said choke, not joke.
Not joke sex. Yeah.
I was going to say, that's like squeezing boobs.
Yeah.
That's, if you genuinely, I've never squeezed a boob and gone,
When do you say a boob or you?
I've never squeezed and gone, have you?
Dan's boob.
More of a squirty flower guy.
What's a squirty flower? Oh, right, yeah, fine. I didn't know. I mean, that sounds like a category.
That was.
Tell me, what am I into? Squirty flowers.
Where were we with that?
We were sort of just talking about a fence.
Yeah, just the squirty boob kind of
diverted. And you wanted to put it in the Wonderbox.
Yeah, because everyone's version of a fence is different. I did a joke the other day about, you know, the wind was so bad in England last week, and I just did a joke about it. So anyone in this audience get blown over by the wind? And a guy said, yeah. I said, well, you're a pussy. Imagine going to A&E. And you're like, what happened? I got blown over by the wind. People were offended once you put it online. You don't know what the weather's like, mate. It's like, no matter what you do, people will be offended, I think, with comedy.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, you call the bloke a pussy.
Well, you got blown over.
But, so, like, it's sort of, you can understand that he's going to be a bit like, what?
Oh, no, he was laughing. It was somebody online.
Oh, was it? That got offended on behalf of the man.
On behalf of the man that got blown over, the pussy that got blown over.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you would like to put in the Wonderbox, Paul?
I only have four things to put in.
All good. As ever, interesting, complicated, peculiar. As every chat we ever have, but I very much enjoy them.
I'm not sure if these were... It's like...
Most people put things they love in.
Is it?
Yeah, but what you've done is you've brought talking points, which I've really enjoyed.
I think that was...
It felt like a therapy session.
Yeah, it's like... That's what Richard Hammond said to me when he was on my podcast, which is coming out soon.
Yeah.
He felt like he was in a therapy session.
I thought you were going to say it. It felt like that time he got shot out of that. did he enjoy it? You and Hamster?
Yeah, I thought, did he enjoy being in a coma? No, he enjoyed the therapy session. Yeah, he was in a coma after that, wasn't he?
Induced
coma.
Yeah.
And then he actually came to my show at the Lyric. Yeah, he came to watch the show.
Nice, man. Good egg?
Yeah, he didn't heckle.
Who's the strangest celebrity you've had come to one of your gigs?
Probably Richard Hammond, I'd say.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe your brother.
Yeah, Daniel's definitely up
there. I think your brother's probably the weirdest guy that's come to my shows.
Fuck yeah. And I've known him for years. And you know whether you're doing well with him or
He's
not.
He's a nice guy, yeah.
Because, you know, you hear my brother's laugh above all.
Yeah.
I remember hearing my brother's laugh at the O2, and there's 15,000 people there, and it was the only laugh I heard for a joke because it turns out I'd said the joke wrong. And
he was in the car park.
He was losing it. Because can you imagine how exciting that would be? Because he knew how the joke was meant to go. I got the joke wrong. And all the crowd are looking at me going, what? I don't know I've got the joke wrong. And I'm looking at them going, why the fuck aren't they laughing? And my brother's going, that's my older brother fucking it up in front of 15,000 people. And he was in a box for free with all his mates, hammered. And I could just hear, like, and I said, and I knew the laugh. So I said, I'll knock your teeth out with a brick. But they didn't know he was my brother.
Oh, they didn't know he was your brother?
Of course not. All they'd seen is a comedian tell a joke that died.
That's great.
And then one man laughed at him and he said, I'm going to kill you.
That's great, because you're not the kind of comic that would say to an audience member, I'm going to knock you out, or even
I'm going to knock your teeth out with a brick.
With a brick is even more aggressive.
It was
aggressive
so
and
specific. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I didn't even say it was my brother. I just then went on to the next
bit. But you know it's your brother, but the audience don't.
No, it was like, and then afterwards I was like, oh, I think that was all right. And James, our mutual agent, was like, that was you're sweating that audience member. I didn't say it was Daniel. I was like, ah, fuck, yeah, that was a weird 10 minutes afterwards.
Yeah. Rescuing the gig.
But, you know, managed to do it. As ever, joyous. Ladies and gentlemen, the wonderful Paul Chowdhury. So there you go, that was Chowders. You can watch Paul Chowdhury hosting the unofficial Science of Die Hard on Sky Plus, and there's a new series of the Paul Chowdhury podcast coming soon. And he's on tour all the time at www.paulchowdhury.com. That's the place you can get tickets. Go watch him if you get the chance. See you next week. See ya.